So the topic is alternative medicine, and it's actually different from the other five that we've had in the series, in the sense that for the other five, the topics that were selected were topics I had spoken on before and had some basic idea structure going in. This one is one that I sort of dabbled with on and off, but I've never actually given a sheer about. And as a result, my thoughts are still very much in progress on this. It's also probably the most directly relevant of all the shiurim. Meaning, like we've talked about shiurim certainly that had practical relevance, but this issue of alternative medicine is a very big one. It's one that questions come up with all the time. And I want to define alternative medicine as medicine that has not undergone what we would consider today substantive testing. Or sometimes it can't do so by definition. Meaning some types of medicine that are included within this group are patient-specific, where they'll say, based on you and based on your body chemistry, this is what's right for you. Which means that I have no way to run mass tests of the medicine because they'll say it's for this unique to this person. And even if you'll say, well, try the methodology, that doesn't work. The Chachamim talked a lot about the importance of testing medicine before it's used. The Rivash made fun of this, the testing methods among the nations, among non-Jews in his day. The Rambam wrote about the need for proper medical testing. I brought you a quote from the Chasam Sofer, in which he said, in the 18th century, "Hanisayon hu eid neman yoser mikol asvaros habenuyos al rayos." He says, experience is a more honest witness than all of the theories founded upon proofs. Whatever you're going to tell me, if you can, you know, if we've experienced it, we have something to talk about. Otherwise, not. So what we're talking about with alternative medicine as opposed to conventional medicine is medicine that hasn't been tested. And I'm going to add to that, medicine which doesn't act through any discernible natural means, which can be, you know, something like an incantation or something. There's no natural means by which it operates. Again, I'm working through this, so this is a working definition. Let's see where it takes us. But the questions I'd like to address, and we probably won't get to all of them, but what I want to go to is, number one, is untested medicine even legitimate within the Torah's license for doctors to heal? Number two, could alternative medicine be prohibited as kishuf, as a form of sorcery? Number three, is a Jew entitled to use alternative medicine if his regular conventional doctor opposes it or simply doesn't support it? Is a Jew allowed to say, I don't want to follow conventional treatment because I want to go with the alternative medicine route? This happens all the time. People are diagnosed, Rahman al-Islam there, but it happens, they're diagnosed with tumors. And they say, well, I want to try this special diet or whatever it is, rather than the chemotherapy. And there are reasons why. I mean, chemotherapy can be painful, can be toxic. But is that a permitted route? Would someone who practices alternative medicine be protected from malpractice claims in a beis din if something goes wrong within the treatment? We have a concept, as we'll see, or maybe we'll see, of protecting conventional medical practice from malpractice if a person is board certified. What if a person is certified by a board of alternative medicine practitioners? Will that be recognized? Even if alternative medicine is generally acceptable, could it override prohibitions like kashrus? So your alternative medicine practitioner says, I'd like to give you the extract from a pig. You know, are you allowed to have that in the same way that we say with regular medicine that it will override a prohibition sometimes? Would you be allowed to have it on Shabbos? Or would there be a problem on Shabbos with doing so? And so on. There are all sorts of questions that come up, because really what we're talking about at the end of the day is how far the Torah's medical license goes. And so we have to begin with the Torah's license for medical practice. And we've talked about this before, so I didn't even bring the source again. We've seen the source a couple of times. But the Gemara says that we need permission for doctors to heal. And the permission that we have for doctors to heal comes from the pasuk v'rapo yirapei. The Torah describes a situation in which person A harms person B, and person A, the vandal, is required to pay for the medical treatment of person B. So the Gemara says, obviously, if there's an instruction of pay for his healing, that must mean that someone is doing the healing. That teaches me that there's license for doctors to heal. Which leads to the obvious question that all the commentators ask of, why does the Torah need to give me license to heal? After all, we're required to save lives. If I'm required to save someone's life, if he's being chased by wild animals, I'm required to stop the wild animals or to save him from them. If he's being pursued by someone who wants to kill him, I'm required to try to save him. Why do I need special permission for treating someone who is suffering from some kind of a fatal disease? So take a look, please, at source number 2. And Rav Kook and his take on it. Rav Kook writes, Upashtam shal divrei chazal, rapo yirapei mikan shenitna Torah rishonas na Torah rishus lerofei lerapos, morekein, sheikar harafua mitzad chachmasam mesupekes hi. He says, the fact that the Torah needs to say, and he shall heal, from which we understand that the Torah permits a doctor to heal, that indicates that medicine is uncertain. We don't really know. Anytime we prescribe anything, we don't actually know that it's going to work. We go with the best information we have at our disposal. He says, Shimhaya davar barur, if it were clear that this was going to work, Eich yale al adas shelo yeh mechuyev l'rapos, how could anybody entertain the idea that he wasn't obligated to heal? The reason why the Torah needs to permit a doctor to practice is because doctors don't really know that it's going to work. V'chein ovra lo samar al dam reyecha kol tzara sheba alav afilu men ha-shamayim. He says, wouldn't you be in violation of don't stand by the blood of another if he didn't heal somebody? Even if you'll say, well, God struck this person down, and that's why the person is sick, and therefore you don't have a right to heal. He says, I'll respond to you that if you see a wild lion attacking somebody, or even a domestic lion attacking somebody, it doesn't have to be wild. If you see a lion attacking somebody, you're obligated to save him. Ah, but God sent the lion. Doesn't matter, I'm still obligated to save him from the lion. So the same thing is true with the disease. You'll tell me God sent the disease. My answer is, just like I have to save people from lions, I have to save them from tumors. So therefore, he says, the reason the Torah says you have to heal is because you don't really know that it's going to work. And the Torah is saying, even if you don't know it's going to work, you have license to do it anyway. Based on the statement of Rav Kook, one could argue that all medicine is doubtful. So what's the difference between giving somebody penicillin for an infection and giving somebody acupuncture or chiropractic or homeopathy or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever type of medicine you want to include? They're all unsure. So there's no reason why I should be compelled to go the, so to speak, conventional route. And that's one argument. Is, oh, they're loud. One argument is that all medicine is uncertain. On the other hand, Rav Nachum Rabinovich disagrees, and he writes in an article that appeared in a work called Bishvilei HaRefuah that it's not necessarily so. He bases himself on the Ramban. The Ramban writes in a book called Taras HaAdam, in a section that deals with medical treatment, he says, the reason why the Torah needs, well, he builds it. Take a look at source number 3. He says, Aval pi dematzinu depikuach nefesh doche Shabbos. We have seen, he says, even though we've seen, that saving lives overrides Shabbos, Hava amina, I would have said, Dehainu davka hatzalas hatoveya banahar, that's specifically if someone is drowning in a river. O shechaya o listim rotvim achrav, or there are wild animals or bandits pursuing him. But maybe saving via medicine is not the act of saving lives that the Torah permitted to override all sorts of prohibitions. In other words, saving lives is not simply a nice activity, you know, the sort of thing you can do on the weekend. Saving lives is given very high priority in the Torah. It overrides all sorts of other mitzvos. So maybe I would have thought medical treatment doesn't count. It's not as obvious a means of saving somebody from danger. It's less direct. And therefore, I needed the Gemara to give me permission to heal because it's indirect. And if you follow this view, then maybe there's a limit on the type of medicine that, in fact, is licensed. Maybe it's only medicine that has been tested and found to work, and so on. So Nachum Rabinovich argues that maybe we should say alternative medicine is not licensed under the permission to heal. That is not the usual argument, though, that's brought against alternative medicine. The usual argument that's brought is the kishuf argument, the sorcery argument. And this is an old issue with quite a history to it. All sorts of practices fit with within it. For example, there was a discussion going back a couple of hundred years about hypnosis. Somebody needed a cure, and the cure that was prescribed for him was hypnosis. And this is before anybody understood anything about brain waves and being able to tell the state in which the brain is functioning and how you might induce a trance state or anything like that. This is before anybody had any clue that anything like that might go on in the brain. They actually thought that hypnosis was related to magnetism. That was the idea at the time for how hypnosis works. No one could explain it, and so the question was, does it qualify as some form of magic or witchcraft or whatever it is, such that I would say you're not allowed to practice it? And the question came to Rav Yaakov Ettlinger and his Binyan Sion. It was revisited later on. One of the questions that came up was, and you could really say this for many treatments, do we need to understand how the treatment works? Or is it sufficient for me to say, I know it's working naturally, I just don't get all the specifics? Because we have a lot of treatments that we know are natural that we can't necessarily explain step by step. Number one, the patient certainly can't, but even the doctor can't. Penicillin for a very long time was known to work in killing things, in killing bacteria, but it wasn't understood. No one understood why the penicillin would kill the bacteria. It was simply exposed to the bacteria died. No one actually knew what was going on. It's certainly natural. It's not a supernatural thing, but you didn't understand it, so would penicillin then be off limits? Or, some of the hypothetical questions that are raised, if you could go back in time and show people cough medicines, or show people penicillin, use that as an example, would they be allowed to use it? Or would they have to say, we're not allowed to use this because as far as we are concerned, it's magic? There's a line, Arthur C. Clarke, I think, is the one who said it, that any sufficiently advanced technology, I'm missing the middle of the sentence, but you get the idea, will be viewed as magic. As long as it's enough ahead of where you are, so you're not going to know how it works, and you'll say, oh, I guess that's magic, right? Think of what was that story, Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court? Where the guy goes back in time and uses gunpowder. Right? I think it was gunpowder in that story.
The movie I know going back in time is 1984.
So this was a book.
Yeah.
Although I think it may have been made into a movie. That's the fundamental question. So take a look at source number four. We're going to see two Mishnayos here. Source number four talks about breaking Shabbos for medical purposes. They're talking about walking around in a public domain while carrying something. And remember that that's biblically prohibited. But what are you carrying? Yotzin bebeitzas hachargol, a locust's egg. Ubeshein shual, a fox's tooth. Uvemasmer min hatzaluv, tzaliva, may mean hanging or may mean crucifixion. It's unclear which is actually meant. But the nail that was used in the wood. I don't mean nail like fingernail. I mean like metal, nail. So walking around with those, he says, you're allowed to travel around with those for medical purposes, according to Rabbi Meir, Divrei Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim say, what are you talking about? You can't do that. Forget Shabbos. You can't do it during the week. Why? Mishum Darkei Amori. That's what we call Amorite practices. The Amori were an idolatrous pagan nation living in Israel before the Jews came into the land. And we associate sorcery, magic, witchcraft with the Amori nation. So what they mean is, this is prohibited during the week. Forget Shabbos. This is weird. This isn't medicine. So writes the Mishnah. So you have a debate between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says, oh yeah, you can do this. You can even break Shabbos for it. And the Chachamim say, run away. You can't do that. Not on Shabbos and not during the week. Two polar opposite views. Clear? Look at the next Mishnah. Mishnah and Yuma. This is a great one. Misha Nishacho Kelev Shote Ein Ma'achilin Oso Mechatzar Kaved Shalo. If a person is bitten, if a person is bitten by a rabid dog, he says, so we don't feed him from the liver of that dog. which apparently was a therapy of sorts in those days, to feed someone from the liver. There are only two pages. To feed someone from the liver of the rabid dog that bit him. So the Tanakhama says, we don't do that. Clear? Again, presumably for the same reason that the Chachamim prohibited in source number 4. Right? Because this is weird. This isn't medicine. Parenthetically, every single modern writer who quotes this case must feel obligated to write in brackets, by the way, this seems to have anticipated Pasteur and the rabies vaccine. Maybe. Not the point. The point is that going back to the days of the Mishnah, they were familiar with such a practice. The Tanakhama, the first view presented, is like the view of the sages in source number 4 and says, this is pagan sorcery, this isn't anything we can do. And Rabbi Masya ben Charash permits it. Rabbi Masya ben Charash says, no, go ahead, that's fine medical practice. What's the issue here? How do I draw the line between medicine and something that I'm not going to trust, that I'm not going to be willing to accept? So everyone, when they deal with this, has to tackle the Rambam. And the problem is that the Rambam wrote too many things on these topics, and not all of them match. So it's a little bit tricky. The Rambam writes about this in his commentary to the Mishnah. He writes about it again in his Mishnah Torah, his work of law, and again in his Mara Hanavuchim, his Guide of the Perplexed. And what we are responsible to do is to try to harmonize his sources so that they all say one thing that we can then apply in order to determine which treatments fall on the locust egg and nail from the cross side of the line, and which ones fall on the penicillin side of the line. So if you take a look at source number 6, we see the Rambam's commentary to the Mishnah about the locust egg. And this is what he has to say. He says, V'chein medamim bale hasgulos. He says, people involved in sigulot. When the Rambam calls something sigula, what he means is that it's supernatural, that it's not something working through nature. Nature he will call TV. That which is sigula is something that people believe in that may work through some other means. The Rambam himself, as we'll see, doesn't believe it works at all. So he says, people who are involved in these sigulot, imagine, shem lokhim masmer me'etz hatzalut, that if they would take a nail from the wood that was used for either hanging or crucifixion, depending how you translate saliva, v'tolim al mishiyesh lo kadachas timidis, and they hang that around the neck of a person who has a chronic fever, mo'ilo, it will help him. That's what these people believe, he says. V'halacha k'Rabbi Yosi, he said the law follows Rabbi Yosi. That's probably a mistake in our edition. It should probably say Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was the one who permitted it, who said you could do that even on Shabbos. Why is it allowed? Lefi shaklal etzleinu kol sheyesh bo mishum refua ein bo mishum darchei ha'emori. Because the rule is that if something has medicine, if something has some medical ability to operate, if it works, in other words, ein bo mishum darchei ha'emori, it's not called pagan. When the Torah says, don't do what the nations do, a warning against getting into idolatry and quasi-idolatrous practices, he says, that's not talking about this. If it works medically, it's acceptable. That's what you need. Follow? Similarly, in source number 7, the Rambam writes, regarding our locust egg and fox tooth and all that, he says, Yotze beklipas hashum u beklipas habatzol shel hamaka, you can put garlic skin or onion skin on a wound. By the way, that has since been medically supported, that practice, in terms of keeping down swelling. There's some sort of enzyme in it. So when your grandmother told you that if you get a bruise or whatever it is, you should put an onion on it, that actually does work. But in any case, he says, you can put that on a wound and walk around with that on Shabbos. The locust egg as well, the shein shual, the fox's tooth, masmer atzaluv, again this nail shows up, ubechol davar shetolan osam lishum refua, all these things that they hang on somebody to heal him, v'hu sheyomer arofim shehu mo'il, assuming doctors will tell you that this worked. So 4 out of 5 doctors are willing to say that the fox tooth is the way to go, then the Rambam is comfortable. He hasn't told us how many doctors you need. What if only 3 out of 5 say it? What if only 2 out of 5 say it? But we will, God willing, come back to that question. So far, what the Rambam is telling me is, if it can demonstrate healing ability, that's good enough. At that point, it is no longer a problem, and you would even do it on Shabbos. You would even use this medication in violation of Shabbos. So far, so good. However, the Rambam has 2 other sources. If you take a look at source number 8, the Rambam comments on the dog liver Mishnah. Right? The one about feeding the dog liver from the rabid dog to the guy who got bitten. Which just seems like adding insult to injury. So the Rambam writes in source number 8, V'chachamim omrim ein overin al mitzvah ela b'ripoy bilvad shudavar barur shahigayon v'anisayon apashut mechaibim oso. He says the reason why they don't want you eating the dog liver is because dog liver is treif. Not to mention repellent. So he said, I shouldn't say that, not having tried it. But the Rambam says that the Chachamim, when they prohibit the dog liver, do so because they say you're not allowed to violate the law unless you're going to heal somebody in a way that is clear, davar barur, something clear, shahi gayon v'anisayon apashrut mechayvim oso, which logic and experience will mandate. The Rambam says, no using a sgula. He says the whole concept of it is weak. It doesn't make any sense logically. And these are untested. So the Rambam here says something different. In the previous 2 sources, the Rambam said, if doctors say it works, that's good enough for me. Now he's saying, if it's a segula, meaning if it operates through some non-natural means, I'm not willing to accept it. You hear the difference? Take a look at source number 9, where he writes in his Mora HaNevuchim. He says, "V'aru beferush." They said explicitly, "Kol sheyesh bo mishum refua, ein bo mishum darkei amori." If it works medically, it's not an Amorite practice. Rotzim bazeh shekomashi yigzireyu ha'iyun ha'tivi hu mutar v'zula so asur. Anything that is dictated by natural analysis, by science, is permitted. I'm using the word science perhaps inappropriately. Natural analysis would be a better translation. That which is decreed by natural analysis is permitted. Anything else is prohibited. Val yiksha alecha, he says, don't be bothered by the question of mashi tiru mehem b'masmerat salu v'shein shual. If that's really true, if the Rambam is right, that it has to be natural, then why is it that back in source number 4, Rabbi Meir was willing to accept this fox tooth and the locust egg and the nail and all of that. He says, don't worry about that. They thought that actually had been tested and found to work. They felt it was medical. So Chacham disagreed. In other words, it's potentially a machlokas in mitzius. We'll see. I'm going to come back to that. Ki komash nisameis nisyono ba'elu alfa pishalo yigzireyo ahekesh humuter la'asoso. He says, any time that you test something and it's shown to work, even if you can't figure out how, like our penicillin taken back before the time when they understood how it worked, he says, I'm good with that. Even if you can't figure out the exact mechanism by which it's operating, you're okay. So the Rambam has presented us 2 different statements. Statement number 1 in the first 2 sources is, if it works, that's fine. Then in the 3rd source, he said, if it's sgula, it's no good. And then in his last source, in the Mora HaNevuchim, he sort of has said 2 different things. It has to work by logic. If you see it works, it's fine. So what am I to do with this Rambam? I broke my head trying to get all these different statements straight. Just trying to figure out what was going on. The Radvaz offers 1 approach. The Radvaz's suggestion is found in source number 10. V'yesh l'tareitz das haravzal. He says, you could explain the view of the master, meaning the Rambam, disirale, derefuos hasigulos enom refua klal. The Rambam believes that segula, anything that purports to act in a supernatural way, is not medicine. V'afilu safek refua ein bahem l'chala bahem Shabbos b'isur Torah. He says it isn't even considered a possibility such that I would break Shabbos in order to provide this treatment for somebody who is sick. You have somebody who is deathly ill, and you have the possibility of the alternative medicine treatment, the Rambam will say you can't break Shabbos to give it to him. Or if it was treif food, you wouldn't be allowed to feed it to somebody. The Rambam equates segula with non-working. It won't work. If it's a segula, it doesn't work. That's the Rambam's idea, which is consistent with his general approach to medicine. The Rambam wrote, I didn't bring it here, but the Rambam wrote that Aristotle knew everything that there was to know regarding the natural world. If Aristotle didn't know it, it doesn't exist. That's how strong he was in this. I have the source here somewhere. I wanted to give it to you so you'd know it. I don't see it in my notes offhand, which is too bad. But maybe I'll email it to you later. I'll have it.
Okay. The Rambam writes,
yeah.
There's a segula for this masmer, Eitz Tzaluf.
That they believed so, yeah.
Yeah, and they can go both there on Shabbos.
So the Rambam said that's why Rabbi Meir permitted it. Where are you reading?
Six.
Right, so he's following. Right, so he is following Rabbi Meir. He's saying that if it's indeed medicinal,
but he uses the word probably as the gulos.
Right, because that was what. Right, so they believed that this in fact would help him based on what he says in source number 8 in his commentary to. I'm sorry, not in source number 8. In source number 9, he says they believed that that was medical, that that had been tested. And they didn't consider it a school, right? In the Rambam's mind, and this is something that the Chida says, the Rambam, basically, in the event that you were to produce something called segula, and everybody called it segula,
i.e. that it was not TV.
If you brought me an example of magnetic wave therapy, okay? Or not even that, because that claims to have a scientific basis. You brought me some potion that you invented and said, this works, it's not medical, but it works anyway. It's not scientific even, there is no explanation, but you should know this works. Says the Chida in his Birkei Yosef, it's in Arachayim Shin Aleph, he says, if you were able to demonstrate that it worked, the Rambam would say, well, then this isn't segula, really. It's actually TV, it's actually natural.
Everything that does work, like just looking at the top, everything that does work,
correct. Correct, and that's the Arthur C. Clarke. I don't know if you were here when I mentioned it, but that's exactly true. He will say it's an advanced technology. We just don't yet get it, but eventually we'll figure it out. Penicillin 100 years ago, same idea. We don't know why it's working, but it's working. Yes.
Right, and in the kind of party, you find people take cod liver oil pills, and yes, it's good for your health, but you can take other things, or you can take.
Right. And that's part of a general medical question. It's beyond the scope of alternative medicine, but it's a general question of the fact that the doctor prescribes this method, does that mean that that's the method I have to use? What if, you can get more complicated, what if 60% of doctors say you have to use this medicine, which isn't kosher, and the other 40% say, no, you could use this kosher substitute. Am I obligated to go with the non-kosher one because more doctors say that that works, or can I go with the kosher option? We're going to see that a little bit. We might get to it. It comes up with Pesach. That's a classic. But we'll talk about that a little bit if we get there in terms of the issue of conventional advice versus non-conventional advice and whether I'm able to choose one over the other.
That's why it's all okay unless it's a problem with Shabbos or Kosher.
So far,
or
Darkimari, if it hasn't been proven to work. Right.
Objectively by itself.
Yes. Now, the Rambam makes some enemies with this statement. When the Rambam says, segula doesn't work, it has to be natural, scientifically explained, either by your science or by someone's science down the line. When the Rambam says that, he disregards a whole host of sources in Gemara that mention incantations to cure things. If you look in the seventh parak in Shabbos, they talk about all sorts of incantations for things like nosebleeds. So what in the world am I to make of that? So different poskim have dealt with this in different ways. The Meiri in the Gemara in Shabbos, Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, says that the ones that were quoted in the Gemara were believed in popularly, and therefore they work by placebo effect. Anything you're seeing that's a segula in the Gemara works because people believe in it, and the concept of a placebo is well established and has been researched and documented. Things work sometimes not because they have any inherent capacity, but because people believe they're going to get better. So that's one. That's the Meiri's approach to it. The another approach of Nerya Gutel in his Sefer Hishtanut HaTva'im BaHalacha, the change in nature in Halacha, says that there are religious statements that the Chachamim made, and there are scientific statements that the Chachamim made. And he argues that we depend on the sages for their religious statements, but not necessarily for their scientific observations. And so if they record medicine, they're recording the medicine of their day. If someone were to ask Pochino today, what do you do for strep throat? His answer would be, you take penicillin. Not because I've done any research, not because I read it in a pasuk in Koheles, but because that's what the doctor says. You take penicillin. Abaye says in the Gemara a bunch of times, Amra li aim, the woman who raised me, told me this is the cure that you do for X. It's not a religious statement, and therefore it doesn't have to carry weight. Some people are very upset by statements like that. But that's Rav Nerya Gutel's position. Rav Nerya Gutel. Yeah, I don't know beyond his Sefer, but the name is around if you want. The Sefer is on Otzer HaChachman, if you have access to it, but you can get it there. The Vilna Gaon was most horrified by this. The Vilna Gaon in Yerodea, it's Kuf Ayin Tesh and Gimel, says that the Rambam was deluded by all the philosophy that he read, and therefore he missed the inner meaning of these practices. But this is the approach of Radvaz in explaining the view of the Rambam. Rav Eliyahu Soloveitchik, in an article in Asya that's available online, argues that this is actually linked to a debate between the Rambam and the Rashbah. See, the Rambam writes a lot about kishuf, about sorcery, as something that doesn't have any inherent power. The Rambam believes magic doesn't work, but that it's prohibited in the Torah because it leads people into idolatry. The idea is, he writes about it in Moreh HaNevuchim in the third volume in chapters 29 and 37. He does it in the second volume. That's the source. His statement that Aristotle knows everything is in the second volume in Moreh HaNevuchim, Perek Chav Beis, chapter 22. But the Rambam writes that idolaters created worship of natural entities in order to achieve specific results. And that all types of magic is a form of that worship. And that's why we're prohibited from emulating activities that they have, where we don't even know that it's going to do anything or has any reason, because it leads into idolatry. Whereas the Rashbah, in a responsum, permitted somebody to make a picture of a lion as a cure. Like to carry around a picture of a lion. It was going to be a cure, and he was attacked for it. The Rashbah was in a sefer called Minchas Kenos. Yeah, and he defends it in a tshuva in a response. And the Rashbah believes that there is power in sorcery, and if your goal in using it is lashamayim, is for heaven, not for idolatrous purposes, then he says you're allowed to use it. He says I have no reason to assume that my scientist knows everything. He says, all these segulot do work naturally, we just don't know how they work, and I don't see any reason to distinguish, as long as you're not doing it for an idolatrous purpose. So the bottom line is that the Rambam, as understood by the Radvaz, says a treatment will be permitted and will not be considered sorcery if it has a track record of success, and the claim is not for supernatural activity. It's working naturally, even if I don't know what that natural means is. That's essentially what emerges from the Rambam. There's more to say on it, but that's basically what emerges from the Rambam. So if I wanted to apply that to alternative medicine, if you have a chiropractor who can show you, I have a track record, I have had hundreds of patients, and the hundreds of patients feel better after the treatments that I give them, I can't necessarily give you all the ins and outs of why this touching this nerve affected that, but I believe this is working through physical means, not through some supernatural thing. That would satisfy the Rambam's criteria. And ditto for any other method you'd want to present, whether we understand how it works or not. The biggest question, though, is what about if conventional medicine actually opposes it? What if someone says to you that he has a particular ailment? Let's say the tumor patient we mentioned in the beginning. Someone has a tumor, and the alternative medicine practitioner says to him, all you need to do is eliminate sugar from your diet and increase your intake of this sprout or whatever it is, and that's going to cure you. Not that such a thing exists, I'm making it up. But let's say that's what the alternative medicine practitioner tells him, and he goes to his MD, who says to him, if you do that, the tumor is going to spread, and a year from now you're going to be gone. is he entitled to say, halachically, is he entitled to say, I choose this doctor over that one? So Rav Nachum Rabinovich quotes the Rashba, as well as the Radvaz, who say, you're not allowed to depend on miracles. A Jew is not allowed to say, I depend on a miracle. Now, you'll argue, that's not really depending on a miracle. Right? He's not depending on a miracle. He believes that he's depending on a segula, perhaps. But based on that, Rav Eliashiv Paskin, that's brought by his son-in-law, Zilberman, in Aleinu L'Shabeach, on Shmos, page 193, that you, if you have a refuah segulit, something that people believe works without having any natural explanation for it, but it has a track record, he says, go for it. You're entitled to use it. Rav Shlomo Aviner, in an article in Asya in 1989, disagreed. He was against it. And this is the prescription he gave. If you take a look on your source sheet, it's source number 12. He quoted the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham there is talking about Shabbos. And he says, Chola Omer Tzarich Ani L'Trufa Plonis. Patient says, I need this medicine, whatever this is. He's not dealing with segula now or unconventional therapies, just generally. The patient says, I need fill in the blank. Rofe Omer Enotzarech. And the doctor says, you don't. Shomin Lachola. So he says, we listen to the patient. We give it to the patient. Because all the doctor said was, you don't need it. Vima Rofe Omer Shoso Trufa Yazikeu. But if the doctor says that giving him this medicine is going to harm him, then Shomin Larofe. Then we listen to the doctor. So where the doctor's position is that this is a dangerous treatment, we're not going to listen to the patient. Dropping like flies. We're not going to listen to the patient.
The actually at 1 o'clock class.
Oh. Okay. In any case. So if the doctor says it's dangerous, then you don't listen to the patient. If the doctor doesn't consider it dangerous, so let him do whatever he wants to his diet. That's his decision, it's his choice, and it's fine. Rav Aviner then asks a very interesting question, which is very relevant. What if in one country they practice it and it's considered normal and approved, but in another country they consider this to be off the wall? They say, no, you can't do that. So he says, and I don't know where he gets it from, he doesn't substantiate it, but he says we view it the same way we view psak. When it comes to issuing a halach decision, you go with the judges who are local. He offers a little bit of an explanation by saying maybe there are reasons naturally why that medicine will work in certain climates with people with a certain diet and it won't work here. He offers that as a suggestion. In other words, ancient Chinese medicine may have worked for ancient Chinese people. But it may be that it isn't going to work in someone in Toronto today because today you have a different diet, you live in a different climate, you have different pollutants in the atmosphere, and so on. So maybe that's the whole of the logic. He does mention that. But he says you go with local medical authority. That's his position. In terms of refusing a conventional treatment, so that already goes into other topics, which I think we've discussed a little bit in the past, but the basic rule is that if conventional medicine is just palliative, it's meant to make you feel better, but it's not actually curing anything, then you do have the right to say, this isn't my interest, I don't believe in this, I don't want to do it. So, to summarize what we've said so far, in case anyone has a 130 class, So to summarize what we have so far, what we've seen is, number one, two different views on whether alternative medicine is licensed under Verapo Yerapeh. One view is all medicine is uncertain. And that's the whole point of Verapo Yerapeh. This prescription in the Torah says, go heal people even though you don't know that it's going to work. And then the opposite view of, no, maybe the Torah only licensed me to break the law to save lives in the event that I knew how it worked and what it was doing, and not just with any treatment that I choose to employ. We talked about whether it might be prohibited as kishuf, as sorcery or pagan practices. We showed the two big sources, those Mishnayos and Shabbos and Yuma. The Rambam with his explanations that seem to incline first to say it has to be proven, and then it also seems to say, well, it can't be segula. And our conclusion based on Radvaz, that to the Rambam, if it's segula, it doesn't work. And it's automatically out. And if it works, clearly it's not segula. And We then said that in the event that conventional medicine opposes it and says it's harmful, you can't do it. If conventional medicine is neutral on it, then you'd be entitled to say, let me try that. But not to neglect the conventional medical treatment that the that is being prescribed, assuming it's more than just palliative. Good so far? Okay. Let's say...
Can you guys wait? Do you guys want more 5 minutes, 10 minutes? 5 minutes more?
Okay. So the there are a whole bunch more questions, but I'm gonna stick to one here. The let's say you have someone who practices this. The Gemara talks about protection for conventional medical practitioners from a lawsuit. It talks about it with a shochet. It talks about it with a beis din. If they make a mistake, but they've done everything they could to learn things properly, and they got certified, they got their smicha, so to speak, they got their ordination by responsible authorities, then if they make a mistake, they are still they are indemnified. They're not going to. They're not subject to a lawsuit. It's what we call a rofe baki, an expert doctor. Will that apply here? So the basis for the idea is found in source number 13. In Gemara in Shavuos, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi kavu kaimi mekami derav. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are sitting in front of Rav. Meaning they were learning in front of Rav. So Mar Amar Shavuos da'achi Amar Rav. One of them swore in the shir. Rav said this, and the other one swore. Mar Amar Shavuos da'achi Amar. He says, I swear, Rav said that. Well, someone's not right. So what happens? Kiyasul kamei derav. They go to Rav and ask Rav, what did Rav say? So Amar Kachaminayu, he said, yeah, this one was right. So Amar Le'idach, so the other one says, Va'ana b'shikra yishtaboy. Does that mean that I swore falsely? Am I in trouble now? To which Amar Le, bless you, Libach Ansach, he said, your heart compelled you to do this. Meaning, you did everything you could to get it right. You went to Shir, you took notes, you studied it, you reviewed it, you just misunderstood. That's not called swearing falsely. The idea is that there's a certain due diligence that a person is responsible to practice, and then if he does his due diligence and things still don't work out, he's protected from repercussions. So Rav Avinair quotes this in that article I mentioned in Asya from 1989, and he says, we go with what doctors generally believe now, even though it's entirely possible that they're going to change their minds tomorrow. There are differences of opinion also among doctors. So as long as I am within the range of legitimate opinions expressed by doctors who have studied and tested these things, I'm okay. He brings you the analogy from Torah where we say that there are shivim panim la Torah. There are 70 facets to Torah. Just make sure you're not the 71st. He says the same thing is true regarding medicine. There's a range of opinions among people who have studied the field and who have tested things out. Anything within that range is okay, but if you go beyond it, then you're not protected. At that point, you would be you would not be protected. That's the basic idea. One more subtopic that I wanted to make sure to get to is the issue of placebo. What if the mode by which it works is actually simply psychological? People think it works, and therefore they get better. So the question then is, are we entitled then to use this? So if you take a look at the Rambam, I brought it here on your last sheet in source number 18. Look at this. Rambam and the Laws of Avodah Zarah. Mishan eshacho akrav onachash. A person was bitten by a scorpion, bitten by a snake. Mutar lilchosh al mekom hanashicha. So one may chant over the place where the wound is, where the bite is. Va'afilu b'Shabbos. You can do it on Shabbos, and there's no concern about medicine on Shabbos or whatever. He says you can do it. Why? Kidei liyashev da'ato ulchazek libo. To strengthen the confidence of this person who believes what you're doing is going to help him. The Rambam says, I don't think this has any effectiveness whatsoever. Nonetheless, Ha'olu Musukanu, since this person is in danger, Hitirulo, they permitted it for him, Kadeshlo Titarif Dato Alav, so that he shouldn't be upset and think that he's going to die. So in other words, psychological treatment is considered within the realm of healing. this is considered to be legit. So, if you have a situation in which I don't know any reason why magnetic wave therapy should work. I don't even know if it exists. I just made it up. There is some kind of sound wave, whatever.
Brain waves.
Okay. So I'm...
Magnetic wave.
Yes?
Yeah, they showed us a video on Psych yesterday where they stimulate certain parts of your brain with magnetic waves.
Yeah.
And it like made this depressed woman happy again.
Excellent.
It was, like, unbelievable.
Okay. So there you go. But now you've debunked my example. So I have to start with something else. Thanks a lot. Let's say that I am of the belief that that whatever it is, tap dancing is going to make me better. Don't tell me you had anything about that in psych yesterday.
Exercise an action.
There you go. It's the endorphins. So the so I believe this is going to make me better. Am I entitled to then practice this on Shabbos? Would you be allowed to practice it in a prohibited way? The answer would seem to be yes. Because as long as I believe it works, it's going to help me. There's a tremendous amount of literature, really kind of a surprising amount of literature, actually, on the issue of either sending someone to ride to a chacham and notify him on Shabbos that someone is sick, that he'll daven on behalf of that person, or writing an amulet on Shabbos, writing it down, breaking Shabbos d'oraisa now, for the sake of somebody who is ill. And they discuss whether this will apply for the sake of settling the patient's mind, even if you don't believe that amulets have any power whatsoever. The one source that people quote on this to try to support the idea is Shulchan Aruch Chaim Shin Chav Chet Dalet, where it says you do everything for a patient on Shabbos that you would during the week. What does everything mean? Take a look, please, at source number 19. Klalo Shaldaver, the Rambam writes, Shabbos legabe chola sheyesh bo sakana, hareyu kechol lechol hadavrim shutzarich lahen. Shabbos is considered like a weekday when it comes to any need of a dangerously ill patient. Will that even include psychological factors? You betcha. Take a look at source number 20. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Yoledes hi kechola sheyesh bo sakana. A woman who is giving birth is considered like a dangerously ill person. Umechalin alei Shabbos lechol ma shetzvicha. We violate Shabbos for any need. Dot, dot, dot. Umadlikin la ner afilu hisuma. You would light a lamp for her even if she is blind. Well, what good is a lamp if she's blind? So there are two explanations that are offered. One explanation that's offered is that the people who are helping her will be able to see what they're doing. But the other explanation that is offered is, even if everybody around her can see just fine, but she is nervous that they won't be able to see, we are able to light the lamp on her behalf. Now, some do point out that Yoledes is in a unique category. The Sefer Zechor LeAvram brings a Rabbi Chezkel Salomon who says that Tosfos in Shabbos Kuf Ches Amid Beis 128b says that a woman giving birth is in a unique category because even more so than a person who's generally dangerously ill, psychologically she's more fragile even than that, and therefore we're especially concerned. But there does seem to be, and there's quite a bit of material on this, ample basis for saying that we would consider the psychological benefit equal to other medical benefits, and therefore it would justify even overriding prohibitions. Yes?
When it's saying that they're also letting a dance, it could also mean that it's another way that they are bringing Hashem into the physical plane of existence that we can physically see, because if you look at a candle or a light, a candle on the side, it sort of looks like an eye, because you have all the different colors, so it sort of looks like the
right
eye is peering in.
Right. That's a beautiful idea. It's a beautiful idea, but I wouldn't take this entirely out of the literal sense of lighting the candle for her. Although I think it's a nice idea. I never thought about the eye idea. Also interesting. There's more as always, but I think that's a good introduction at any rate.
Yeah, sure. Excellent. Thank you very much.